party, then we mash up the place. Party after party, then we mash up the place. Party after party, then we mash up the place. Mash up the place.
Big trail on the beat.
Yeah. Party after party. Yeah. Party after party. Yeah. Party after party. After party after party. Yeah. Party after party. Yeah. Party after party.
We bring you in the studio this morning. Party after.
Come on, bro. You got it. Wait.
We bring you in the studio this morning. One of the gay rights activists.
Yes.
Mr. Should I call you Mr.?
Yes.
Mr. What's his name? Pepe Julian Onzima. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you.
Why are you gay?
I'm not gay.
Welcome, people. Let's again. Oh, that's mad. That's mad. It's crazy how like that interview blew up now.
Bro, some people go wonder, what are these guys? What skit are these guys doing?
If you haven't seen it, it's Pastor Martin Sempa. He's a Ugandan pastor.
Yes.
Interviewing a human rights activist in Uganda. This was like 7 years ago or something.
Oh, it was that old? It just got viral really late.
Yeah. Mm. And actually, the sample from that song is from the interview that he did.
Oh.
Because he was saying, like, you know, Ugandans like to party after party.
Oh, that's what it. Oh.
Yeah, so they sampled that from that.
Oh, he got this party after party. Yeah. Oh, I see.
So they sampled that, and now, like, the song's blowing up, like, everywhere.
Yo, this song be lit. If you guys didn't know, DJ Hanzo played this November 22nd. Oh, man. Like, once he gone party after party. Oh, man. It was lit.
Yeah, man. That was a late night.
It was.
Big ups to of course, Didi Yanene and our very own Mr.
Yes.
Honorable General Baji.
Yes.
Happy 25th, bro.
Thank you. You know, 25, gang. Quarter century, gang.
It's a milestone, man.
You know, yeah. You know, I'm just thinking, like, man, some people, like, you might go through the quarter century life crisis. So, what is it going to be? Am I going to get earrings? Or am I going to get, like, you know...
Tattoos?
Ooh, no. I don't know about that one yet. No. I can't do that one. Okay. But, realistically, if we're being realistic... Mm-hmm. It might be option A is earrings. B, I might say goodbye to the wave again, the Ocean Squad.
Grow it out
and do like a those locks, like a locks.
Okay.
And do it with like a fade. That will definitely be a quarter century crisis. Option C is both. Grow the hair, get a whole locks, braids, mini braids, locks.
Boy,
and then get the earrings on.
He can just go
walk up to walk.
Try out to the NBA, for the NBA.
Bruh, after that, you don't understand, bro.
Welcome back, people. Welcome back to episode 9.
Yes,
it is your host nine. With the most. You understand?
The serious guys.
Serious guys, fun guys.
Yes,
coming back at you with the second to last episode now.
Dang, that's crazy. We're about to hit 9.
And
we started this peak summer.
Yeah. Mm. And it's crazy because, like, time flies, man.
Yes. A lot has happened, guys, since the first episode. But good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to be back, you know, hollering with the people.
Mm-hmm.
In spirit of holiday season, Thanksgiving just hit.
Yes.
Now, rolling into December, you know, people are getting together with families and everything. I think it's important we be grateful.
Of course.
For... everything that we have around us, everything that's, you know, the people, the relationships we have, you know, just stay grateful, man.
No, it was good. And the gym was very packed today, must I say. Post Thanksgiving.
It's crucial, man.
Man's had to wait for the bench rack out here.
It's crucial.
I'm like, please.
And it's that season too, because, you know, once the New Year's resolutions hit.
Oh, man, this is not the time I like going to the gym.
You got it.
You have Thanksgiving, post Thanksgiving, guilty gym goers.
Mm-hmm.
You have, I ain't gonna be here Christmas to deal with it. But usually, like after the Christmas period, gym peaks again with all these people. Then, oh my God, the New Year resolution, folks.
It's peak. Man. That's when gyms make a lot of money, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they get you with the... Now you paying for a gym membership.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, like I said, by February, you know...
That's when numbers start
only to the masters are staying.
Hey, but nah, go to the gym, people. We need to be better about that.
You know, we've talked about this. We had Matt here. We had my big bro here, too, Ismaila. And, you know, we talked about the whole health as well. You know, guys, you know, let's keep active. You know, keep burning calories.
It's important.
As we intake calories over this over this holiday season, I mean.
Especially you Ugandans, man. Like, holiday season, all the drinking we're going to be doing, just...
That's bare calories, fam. Bare calories, you know? You
can't be getting beer bellies at 21.
Sheesh. You know, 22. They call it a bong. We call it a horizontal badge. Uh-huh. So, you know, you got your badge. So, as the belly expands... Your badge starts going horizontal. So, you know, guys, no horizontal badges out
here. None of that, please.
You know, so please, let's keep it healthy and keep it going.
Keep it going. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Thanksgiving was good. We had a few Friendsgivings that we went to, and I'm sure you all did as well.
Yep.
But yeah, man, just give thanks every day.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So what we got today for the folks out here?
First, we're going to recap that last episode with Leslie.
With Leslie, huh?
Apologies for not posting as much about it.
We kind of let the ball drop on that one.
Yeah, life just caught up, but it's a very good listen. You guys need to go peep that, especially if you are thinking of I'd say, teaching. If you're looking to teach others, and that doesn't have to be a teacher profession, but... If you're looking to, you know, take your skills and transfer them to the next person, to the next, you know, generation, that's a very good listen. And overall, just for the status or, say, future of the continent.
I think, for sure. And like I said, you know, and just to reiterate, like, it's good, like, to teach the skills and stuff. But, like, if you have the passion that you want to go there and do things, like, You can make something happen. You just need to, you know, have that drive and actually that want or desire to go and positively impact your society or your community. So, you know, there's a lot of mediums, a lot of opportunities for us. So, if you want to do it, you know, like I said, Leslie kind of shows you her game plan in terms of, like, just taking initiative. You know, just go out there and just get the ball rolling. So that was another good perspective on things. Because sometimes we might overplan or think, oh, no, we need this, we need that. Yep. From what I got from her, it was like, she was like, yeah, you can think about all the variables. Oh, I'm doing my master's or this, that. Or how about you just go there and actually, like, just implement it and see how the reaction was. So there's a lot of bravery that comes with it, too.
Yeah. It's no dream too big, but it's... Like, you still have to be disciplined with what you're doing and willing to learn, you know. The one most important thing that I, out of many that I picked up from that episode, was she was basically saying that, look, we need to get rid of this mentality that, especially on the continent, where if you're not at a desk job, you're not doing well. So what she's doing about that is expanding technical skills, you know, things that people often overlook, and highlighting the importance of those skills in our society.
Yeah, right. You know? And, you know, if most of us reflect back, into our communities, I feel like a lot of us can see kind of it's an underlying problem that we're not, you know, recognizing, especially back home in West Africa. Because I remember my dad when he was doing... he was lecturing at the University of the Gambia. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me, like, hey, during graduation, like, you know, he was like, there were not, you know, a lot of, like, STEM graduates. Mm-hmm. Everyone had, like, law or, you know, like, it was all liberal arts graduates. And it was so, like, lopsided. Mm-hmm. So, and I asked him, like, so what happens when these guys graduate? Mm-hmm. What are they going to do? Well, you know, they'll go work at the bank, you know, some work at this government offices and stuff. You see, desk jobs. And now, you know, if you think about it, now it's like you've oversaturated, like, people working at, like, these banks or, you know, like, these offices where now you're lacking in still, like, what if they had like different competencies or kind of do like what Leslie was trying to bring it into STEM, mm-hmm. study other things, have some electricians or study some electrical engineering or, you know, something where now, you know, you have a society where you have a balanced set of, you know, supply to different skill sets.
Definitely.
That are not just like, oh, I'm going to be a, just work at a bank or just work at the government offices or do law.
I mean, you take, for example, like here, it's that middle class that runs.
That runs the economy. The, you know, middle class runs it.
So, instead, that's by far one of biggest things that we need to build on our continent.
Blue collar work. No matter what. You know what they always say? You see, you know, every election here in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
The central theme of each political candidate is to try and tap into this blue collar work. We're here to support blue collars.
Yep.
You know, you guys, you know, run country. You guys are the foundation of this country. And, you know, we in Africa, it's like we completely want to bypass this blue collar middle class and just go straight to riches. And then you have like this, you know, inequality. And there's no, now that's how our economy is, you know, we don't have that strong, solid foundation of, you know, like, let's say blue collar, you know, here it's like everywhere, there's unions for everywhere.
Yeah.
Blue collar is so powerful in America, that it's essential for anyone who's trying to run for president.
And I think a big thing that people miss is that there is innovation in blue collar work.
Always.
You understand? Like, the people tend to think that, you know, once you get into that skill, that's as far as your skills are going to progress. But
no,
there's so much more.
It leads to many more. I mean, think of, you go to a lot of businesses, you know, you see the son runs it. Why he runs it now, like the dad used to own the business, he's retiring, he's treating the son, you know.
Yep.
And you know, it's building up. That's, you know, a transition of a business, and you know, it's moving forward. And these are, you know, like, could be painting or, you know, these are stuff that are needed. But you know, a lot of times, like in Africa, we're just thinking, and you know, like I said, we can't even tie it all the way back to our parents, where you know, it's like,
and it's,
go get like a, if you tell your parent, you know, like, let's say realistically, let me study to be an electrician, get, you know, license and operate and even start my own business or start doing my things and make my own good living and can build that off into my own business versus let me go and just study, you know, just to, you know, work at like, you know, a bank or something, you know, you know, like standard stuff we're used to. These are what, you know, which one would they deem, you know, to them something they'll be more proud of. So
And especially as our leaders talk about like moving towards industrialization, I don't know about like Gambia, but in Uganda, like, our leaders are saying that by 2030 we're gonna be a middle
vision 2030,
yeah, stuff like that, you know, like we're gonna be a middle economy nation. And it's like,
but what's the plan?
You know, where's the plan to get to that? We need to really expand on those industrialization skills that, you know, or skills that you can just expand on into the industry, you know.
You know, I hate to be that guy, but yeah, I'm very pessimistic right now with, you know, when it comes to African leaders and their visions, because it's I feel like it's all talk. It's stuff that, you know, the Western countries want to hear. But when you go on the ground, you know, it's like you have a few brave innovators or people who are trying to, you know, basically be the catalyst for that to happen. But they're facing so much resistance from the status quo.
Definitely.
It's like,
I'd say it's very difficult to operate in the private sector.
Extremely.
Because of the powers against you. And it's very comfortable to be one of the corrupt people in places
that's,
of power.
That's the problem. You know, like me and you, we can have our own innovative business plans that, you know, if we implement, can not only bring the society so much greater good, you're filling the economy, you're creating new job opportunities, industry, all the multiplying effect of that. But the resistance you face, it's almost as if like it's harder to want to help your people than, you know, if you came with cash, corrupt, pay the government, pay these people, run this corrupt operation. I'm sure it's much easier at an unethical standpoint. So this is our dilemma, people.
I mean, it's always been, but It's only the you see the great businessmen that we have that have, you know, stuck, weathered the storm.
They can weather the storm, but I mean, I you know, like I said, I'm always optimistic for like a change in the civil society back home, and like, you know, like we've seen countries like, you know, Ghana is, I like Ghana in that example of their civil society, you know, their sense of democracy and how they kind of, you know, their structure. It's all based out of, I feel like, a strong civil society. And most African countries, they don't like, they lack that civil society that can, you know, enable and empower and, you know, hold politicians accountable, not just by them trying to be dictators. Because if you don't have a civil society, that's why we have all these long dictators in Africa of, you know, decades, you know, presidents that have been there since we were born, since our older siblings were born. It's because of a lack of a strong civil society. Okay, you can say, because due to oppression or, you know, fear of life, of thinking, you know, retaliation from the government, or, you know, if you try and, you know, be that source of resistance. But, you know, we've seen the Arab Spring. You know, you see what happens when there's an uprising from, especially like us being mostly youth, you know, like, you know, under 25 population. So,
and for me, it's not even, it's not to take away from what some of these men have done, because a lot of those men have done, men and women have done some very good things for their countries.
Of course.
But it's when you overstay your visit, you overstay your welcome, and now you start to lose sight of what you were even there for, you know?
This is the dilemma, I feel like. It's almost like a standard. Like, I don't know if all these presidents took the same dictatorship one-on-one class. But it's like, it's the same thing. They come off, you know, same thing from a long rule, or either from colonialism or a long dictator. They come in, they're refreshing, they're huge favorites with the younger population. There's optimism, people are happy, people are accepting, and, you know, they start off very charismatic, you know, have a great sense of national pride, you know, love their country. That's the standard. This is what we see. But as time starts to fade, you know, the longer they stay in power, it's like inversely proportional to, you know, what good they bring to the country in the end. So the longer they're staying, you know, people getting fed up, they start doing more things, you know, low-key, that's when the killing starts, that's when the allegation starts doing bad stuff. And it just becomes, you know,
it's just a domino effect.
You know, and it gets to a point where they're like, I have to stay here, or else, you know, if I leave, I'm practically an international criminal. And guess what? They won't leave. So until... You know, so I don't know.
It's That's another controversial topic too, is the ICC.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, all of the leaders that have been, well, not all, but most of the leaders that have been
African,
are all African. So.
Charles Taylor's and them.
So, I mean, that's another controversial topic.
A whole nother, but, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, like I said, though, this is, I feel like what Leslie was talking about in terms of, you know, trying to, you know, basically, you know, inject a new, you know, like, passion for these skills and traits that now in Africa they're not deemed so much respectable when they're needed, because you need that blue collar, you need that strong middle class, you know. And this is like, if we, like, from what she said she did, if we had to, like, you know, break it down into saying, okay, this is what she's doing, this is what it can lead to, why is she doing this, you know, like, what the bigger picture is, it all comes down to that. It's a lack of a middle class in Africa, or the necessary skills needed for what we have for blue collar workforces. You know, I wish we go to countries where they're like unions, you know, blue collar unions, you know. That's a strong country, fam.
It is.
You know, if an African country could be like that, but, you know.
Yeah. We'll see. There's no dream too big, no job too big, no job too small, man. Like, vocational work, like, we need to expand on the technical skills aspect of our
hands-on. You know, we have to be hands-on, you know, so.
Because the thing that kills me is the certain men that have a big role in office, right? And you come home and you can't fix
change a light bulb.
You know, you can't change a tire. You gotta call the... Come on, man.
Can't do anything. But that's, I think, that's our society. Oh, my God. Go and call the mechanic. You know? You know,
and then he comes scrambling.
It's like, you know...
Like, as if he owes you something.
We see it, you know? It's like, can't do anything. Oh, you know, call this, call that person. go call this guy, go call that guy. You know, you gotta go call the guy.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
Man, Leslie, that was a fire episode.
Leslie, yeah, you sparked, you know, all these conversations.
So, if you guys haven't listened, definitely go listen right
now. Your head
is on your shoulders. It's on your neck.
Your head is on your neck.
On your neck.
Basil.
Yo, she hit us with that too.
Leslie didn't like that though.
Yeah, shout out to Leslie, man.
Yeah, for sure.
But in kind of the same aspect of technical skills, not so much, but skills. The main topic of discussion today is Africans in mainstream music and film.
I take off Nigerian movie.
Yeah, that is crazy because when we were growing up in Uganda, that's what we would be saying. Chineke,
you know.
Hey, but we don't realize how much of an effect.
Well, now we do. Now we realize it.
Now
we grew up like watching
those.
Goats. Osofia
Patience. London, all them, man.
All these guys, you know.
I remember a lot of men, them Genevieve.
Genevieve, like you know. You know, it's crazy.
And not even past Nollywood, like, I think our local like media started to grow.
So,
because of that.
So okay. So let's first look at it from a musical standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. So when you were growing up, what was the primary music you guys listened to?
So we listened to, of course, Ugandan music.
Okay.
Kenyan, a lot of Kenyan music, a bit of Tanzanian music, and then it would be like songs from like all over the continent, but they're sporadic, you know, like Premier Gaou.
It was, yeah.
Like Brenda Fassie from
South Africa. Yes, that's right.
Two-Face was popping off here, like 2-3 songs.
Two-Face started coming around close to mid-2000s.
Yeah.
But let's break it up before mid-2000s. Before the first wave of Afrobeats, the Two-Face, the Nice, the P-Squares, that's the first wave, the Dimanche.
Yeah.
The first wave, pre-first wave of Afrobeat. So you're saying these were the guys you were listening
to? In East Africa, that's what we were listening to.
So, okay. So I can't speak for West Africa, but I'll say in Gambia.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I can maybe claim Senegal region, you know. Mm-hmm. Primary was, you know, Ndaga, which is, you know, it's primarily Senegalese music, but, you know, we have Gambian Ndaga, it's not as big.
Okay.
But Ndaga, i.e., biggest star, Youssou N'Dour.
Mm-hmm.
Youssou N'Dour won a Grammy, if you guys didn't know.
Oh, yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I know.
Youssou N'Dour is probably, especially like, if you look at it, he's probably like top 3 greatest African musicians right now.
Mm-hmm.
Not even like, all time. To me, I'll say all time,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I don't want to create another common work. So, kind of warm. So, Youssou N'Dour, a lot of Ndaga growing up. And then in Gambia, you know, it's a huge Jamaican music influence.
Okay, yeah. See, now we had that too. Bashment.
So Jamaican music was up.
Yeah.
So you have the bashment, the dancehall, the reggae.
And,
you know?
And not only that,
especially in the youths.
It influenced our music too.
It did.
Because now we had like this bashment sound that sounded like
Jamaican. Right. So I guess let's put that across the board.
Yeah.
So Jamaican music across the board.
For sure.
And I guess regional music. Mm-hmm. So for us in Gambia, we had the Ndaga.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you know, La Loca Gambia music too. Mm-hmm. A famous one, I would say, would be Jeliba Kouyaté. So he was a Mandinka. He played with this instrument called the kora and he sang.
Yeah, I know what that is.
You know, so yeah. So, you know, well, for me, those are what I largely, but you know, it was still though Senegalese music, at least in Gambia, the artists were premier, i.e. Youssou N'Dour,
yeah,
you know, premier, like, you know, your moms, your aunts, you know, love that guy.
Do you know, we listen to a lot of like,
and of course, like little bit of the Congolese,
we listen to a lot of Congolese music, but it was never like us playing it, it's just our parents.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, it's the parents.
You go to the weddings and you hear it,
you know,
you know every song. But you're never going to go burn a CD of that music.
Yes, exactly. You did not, you know. And, you know, hip-hop was there too, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Hip-hop will be there, you know, boys, you know, like, you know.
Yeah, do you know, man, we had, like...
50 Cent was at his peak of power.
Oh, G-Unit. Yo, my older cousin, Nelson, had this, the Get Rich or Die Trying CD.
Yeah.
And my brother used to blast that.
Used to bump it. I remember, you know, you have the Nellies, you know, like the early 2000 rappers, you know.
And I don't know how you guys did it in Gambia, but in Uganda, right, we had these places where you would go burn CDs for you. So you go to like a shop. Like, there's a guy in the back who has a computer.
Oh.
You pay him like a certain amount of money, and he burns a CD for you.
Really?
If he provides it, you pay extra. If you bring the CDs, he doesn't.
Wow. So much, dudes, right? Were making business out of it. Sure, I'm sure there was something like that in Gambia.
That's where like the CD players were popping off. You know.
That's true. It was starting to. You know, it was, you know, like the player,
yeah,
the CD player with, you know, those were very popular.
Yeah.
But you know, like you said, largely, we had our regional music, let's
mm-hmm.
say,
mm-hmm.
a constant of Jamaican music, Jamaican mm-hmm. artists, that's constant, reggae. Hip-hop, you know, it's not as high, but yeah, it was popular,
it's
especially present among the younger people.
Yeah.
But that was it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if we go to now, when did you first start hearing, and you will give Nigeria like the, you know, the resurgence of this Afrobeats, you know? For us, it was me and my sister listening to Dibanj,
yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, Coco Masega, you know, that song. Yeah, we would play it. P Square album that came out, I think, in 2004. We would play "This Not That Fish." You know? You know? So it's like, so 2004 or 6, I don't know which one it was, but P Square, Dibanj, Nice, Two Face. Did I say Two Face?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, yeah. So those were the first artists I started hearing, you know, coming back. That's the first time I even started listening to Nigerian music.
Yeah.
Period.
For us, it was Two Face that, like, I think made his
presence. Two Face blew up. And, you know, and he had the My African Queen song that got overplayed.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know.
And it's still a classic, man.
Still a classic.
But Two Face, as far as Nigerian artists, I think in East Africa, he was the first to really like blow up on that level. And that's also because of like Channel O and like MTV.
MTV, you know, the DSTV, we gotta give DSTV props.
Shut up, bro.
You know,
we really
Channel O, that was the Channel O, right there,
bro. Yeah, like, that was vibes. Like,
it was all good until, you know, like Pops came, hey, pass me the remote, let me watch it.
Yo, Super Sport.
Super Sport. Like,
come on, son.
Super Disky. Come on, man. I used to watch the South African Football League now. So
yeah,
Disky, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Bro, we shout out DSTV. Like, we used to watch Formula One on
Formula
there.
Formula One.
All Premier League.
Premier League. On there. All of us.
Even rugby was started to pick
MTV,
up
MTV, I used to watch Yo Mama, like, every day.
Yep.
You know?
All the music videos.
Music
like,
videos.
Stand in front of the TV. And
so, we grew up on this, you know? So, for those who don't know, you know, DSTV was, like, let's say, a premier cable provider, the satellite that was pretty common. They had like what, 40-50 channels?
They grew like that.
I'm saying that's like when we were growing up, you know, and they had movies, Mnet and movies, you know, that largely they had WWE.
Mm-hmm.
When we grew up, we had, you know, DSTV was how we, you know, a lot of us connected. You know, connected or saw the American culture, or you know how it was. So it was through DSTV. So shout out to DSTV.
They're South African, I believe.
Yeah, they're South African and Nigerian, both of
Are
them.
They?
Yes, okay. South Africa and Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, but yeah, this is what we grew up in. But you know, we're coming to the evolution for us, our generation, where Nigerian music influx started happening mid-2000s through these said first wave of artists that we saw.
And I think they were really just icebreakers for what was to come, because they laid that foundation perfectly.
They did.
Right?
They definitely laid the foundation.
I don't think even they realized how big of an influence.
The global impact, I don't think so.
I mean, we look today now, we have Burna, who was just nominated
for a Grammy. Yep.
I think it's like the world category, I think that should be obsolete by now, you know, because it's like, listen, just because it's not. Anyway, we shouldn't be seeking validation from
Grammys anyway, but you know, it's just.
But it's just a thing. It bugs you because you're like, you know, that's. It's not world, you know? It's his own thing. But anyway, you got Burna blowing up all over the continent.
Mr. Easy.
All over. You know, but damn near the world, bro. He's blowing up all over.
So it's like.
Wizkid, Davido.
So second wave, would you put Wizkid in
on the second wave?
Wizkid, Davido.
Yeah.
T-Mayas.
Team Aya Blue.
Yeah, you know, little. Which guy? Can we give some Ghanaian rappers? Which Ghanaian guys blow up?
Sarkodie, ODG. Oh, Fuse, bro. Fuse, ODG. Actually, I think Fuse was the threshold.
So Fuse, ODG.
Yeah.
The Afro beats.
I think he was the threshold to the world.
So, cause I don't think when the first Nigerian man, I wish I said to us here, my older sister, she knows this history to a T.
Yeah.
I don't think, I want to know at one point, because the Two-Face, that was not Afrobeats. Wizkid, no. When he first started WWE, that was not Afrobeats. Mm-hmm. So I would say, do we give the Ghanaians credit for bringing the Afrobeat?
I think you could almost
them that. Because I think we'll have to.
Because, what's that, 2011, 2012.
That's when it transitioned into Azonto Afrobeats.
In London. You know those videos I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where they popped off in the train and like...
That's when it went viral and went worldwide. That's when the Afrobeats went worldwide.
That's Afrobeats, like, as we know today. That's like... That's
and it's those producers, like, mm-hmm. you know, like the Fuse, ODG, where he had this beat, you know? Because, you know, before, like, you're singing, it's here and there. It's all over. It's sporadic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you had the sound. It's coming from Africa.
It's there.
You know? But now you have, like, when the Ghanaians came into it with the Azonto, you know.
And it taps into the diaspora.
Diaspora and the beat. And that's when the dances started coming.
Yeah.
You know, and then that's why now producers started, you know, tapping into, you know, creating these beats, sampling beats.
Mm-hmm.
And now creating this, you know, rhythm that always existed within the region. And now it just took off.
It's almost like, I don't even know what the word for it is, but it's been so beautiful to watch that, like, transition from...
To be honest, it's like, and we were all living in it, moment.
We lived in that moment, and we were a part of that moment.
We saw it, but, you know... Yeah, and...
I mean, you go from...
And, you know, around that time frame, you know, 2011, 2012...
Yeah.
Like, I just remember, like, my Jamaican music influx of, you know... Like, I'm listening to it, just started dropping. So, essentially, Afrobeats was becoming such this big monster that, mm-hmm. you know, the Jamaican, of course, still popular, whatever, but, like, the Jamaican music was, to be honest, a lot of countries in Africa, it was our primary source, it was our primary number one option for youths. Our music, number one option was usually, you know, you go to parties and stuff, is Jamaican music, mm-hmm. all the way mm-hmm. through. At least for me growing up back then, we go to parties, house parties, it's Bassman all day, you know, Busy, you know, all these guys, you know. Loved it. But, you know, like you said, but it was slowly creeping in. You said, do me, the P-Square started coming in. And, you know, it slowly started growing to a point where I just feel like it just transitioned.
I think it's also another thing to be said, right, is... I heard this on a podcast, actually, that I was listening to. Someone was saying that the reason...
Don't mind us. It's just the Lapo walking by.
That the reason, like, dancehall, bashment, all that started to drop off is because they weren't innovating their music.
They didn't evolve. That's anything. You have to evolve because, you know, after a while...
They got left behind.
Evolve and think of it, right? Like, okay, I can't speak for Jamaica, but, you know... I feel like throughout, it was still these main giants, still these main artists, right? Mm. Afrobeats, every new year, there was somewhere new. Like, Afrobeats, every year, there was someone new.
Yep.
Every new year, someone, oh, yeah, I heard of it. Oh, yeah, I heard of this guy. You know, it's like a lot, it just kept coming. So a lot of, when you have a lot of creativity and a lot of new people coming and bringing in something different, it grows.
And shout out to people on the continent, too, just... embracing the movement and propelling that forward.
Let's create our own.
Because you go to any, like, say in Uganda, you go to like an Eddie Kenzo show, you go to like Fik Fameka, any of those guys, packed. The shows are packed.
Yeah, that's
people
how it starts.
Are showing up, you know, people are like playing their music in the clubs. They don't want to hear, like, they don't want to hear American music anymore. It's like, let me hear my
music. Yeah, that's how you know things have transitioned. So... Yeah, I mean, and now, I mean, look at it now. Like, you go to any clubs, like, they're playing Afro beats everywhere. So
even in American, like, clubs.
But here's the thing, fam, though. I ain't gonna lie.
Uh-huh.
If I go to a club and they start playing, if I tell you, say, Bruh.
Hey, but
so you know how it is.
Hey, shout out to all my Africans in the building. Where are my Africans at?
And then they play.
If I tell you,
I'm like, oh shoot, but I be rolling my eyes like, oh my god, like come on.
And I can't
even. Okay, do we hate on that, or do we say at least they're trying? Or it's like, come on, fam.
I can't even be mad at that because they're just late to the party, and it's gonna take like big records like that to win over the fans.
Yeah, you're right.
Because you think about big like the whole K-pop movement, how it popped off
over. Yeah, you're right.
You know, a few songs came in and then everybody caught the wave. Now you got diehard K-pop fans. I think it's weird, but it has to be the same thing with Afrobeats, where people hear a few big records, you know, they catch the vibe, and then they fall into the whole like movement.
I guess.
You know, I hate hearing If I Tell You Say I Love You, like, so just as like, much really? As the next man. But if I'm in a big club and I hear that, I have to respect it. You know, you see
what that guy is not good at concerts.
Yeah, Davido.
Look, guys, we might send Snowman to come and talk to this Nigerian artist for their concert skills.
Yo,
because some of these artists need to work on their concert skills. You know,
and it's they need to hop on that early because. You have to keep your market.
You have to keep it. Because, I've been to how many? Wizkid, disappointing.
Disappointment.
Man. We went to Wizkid in Vancouver. Disappointing. I didn't go to Tenny, but I heard she heard. You know? She came in, Eurostepped, and threw the deuces. What she played for? 20 minutes or so?
That's what I heard.
You know?
I heard it was 20 minutes, but.
Coming late. You know, like, I'm just saying, too, these Nigerian artists, you know, I've heard, you know, like, most of the time, like, it's usually very underwhelming when you hear reactions from people in these concerts. It's like, just look at, like, the biggest artists in the world, like, how they take, you know, that so seriously.
I mean, you would never get that at, say, a Chris Brown.
You know, coming in at, like, 3 a.m., coming, you know, it's just like...
One of our own, Jidenna, bro. His concert was dope.
He came right there on time.
He gave us a show.
By 11, we were done.
Brother left. Everybody was happy.
You know? But, you know, so that's also another thing, you know, that comes with it. Anyway.
Please, our people, respect time.
Respect time. You know, Tenny, you got to ask us. You got a couple of people here.
I got a friend. I'm not going to mention who she is.
She knows who she is, though. Yeah, yeah.
But she was the biggest Tenny fan up until that concert. She loved Tenny, bro. She used to vibe with Tenny. Every song knew all the lyrics. Even paid for the VIP ticket, bro.
Dang, you hate to see it.
And then Tenny comes and shows four or five songs in the Thank You Seattle and leaves. Like,
first of all, I heard she came like what, 2-3 hours late?
And this was this in a place where people have worked the next day at.
It's on a Thursday.
7 a.m. 6 a.m. 8 a.m. Like, you're showing up at what time? Midnight? Like 12:30 or something? Come on, bro.
Like Jose Mourinho said, respect. 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 So that's another thing, though. That's what I'm saying. That's what I've seen, at least, from these Afrobeat artists, too, you know.
You got to realize it's a business. You know, just as much as it's entertainment, it's still a business. And the only way you can grow your brand is by being a good business.
But here's the thing, though, you know, like, do you think when they're going to play in, like, Sweden, or, you know, when they go to these big concerts, like, big areas, do you think they're showing up late? Or is it because, like, you know, came to Seattle and it's like, you know...
That's a good point. I like to think that.
I feel like they choose where they want, they can get away with those things. If they were playing at the O2 Arena or something, I don't think they're coming up late.
But, you know, Jidenna, actually, like, a few years ago, when that One Africa concert happened in London, he was talking about that. He was talking about how all the artists, like, went over their sets.
Because they were late. Sets,
you know? And he didn't get to perform. And he was like, yo, come on, like, people pay good money to come see some of our other artists, you know? Let's be better about that.
Really?
So I think they do pick and choose, but I still think that's the
generally they just don't respect time. And you know, if it's a management thing or if it's the artist thing, they should just do a better job and don't show up drunk at like the show. The video, you know, it's like, come on, bro.
Respect,
like,
your art, you know?
Exactly. So anyway,
yeah, back to this evolution thing, like, how do you see the state of the... And I don't even want to call Afrobeats a genre because it's much
not,
bigger
it's
than
not
that.
It's not a genre,
There's so many different genres within the movement.
Yep.
How do you see the state of it? Like,
I mean, I'm not going to call it at its peak. But in our, so far in our lifetimes, this is at the peak, right? So the peak of its popularity is at the peak of its recognition. You know, as of right now, spearheaded by Mr. Bonaboy,
mm-hmm.
the easiest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put Wizkid in there, but, you know, he's more commercial. And
yeah,
like, I'm not going to claim, you know. But anyway, but right now, I feel like it's at its peak, so it's the best time to... for those who have that passion for music and want to keep that ball rolling, this is the best time for opportunities because, you know, record labels, I feel like, are soon going to be wanting to sign. Like, probably major record labels here are soon going to want to be starting to sign.
Yeah.
Good music has been doing it. But, like, you know, like, you start going to major record labels wanting to sign Afrobeat artists. So, I just feel like it's a prime opportunity to take advantage. Like, the industry, when business is booming, you got to just now jump ship and... you know, we see this, hope to see more talents, you know, like you said. We had Jesse here who and this is a prime example. We had Jesse who, you know, we got a chance to talk to. He's like, yo, I'm doing my thing, you know, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and like I said, it's like, it's timing, right? I feel like everything is timing. And it's like, you know, reason why we're supporting. It's like, because Afrobeats is on right now. It's hot. So, you know, if you have the talent or, you know, people feel like, you know, they have something that they can contribute to, this is, you know, I don't, because we don't know how long this window would open. It mm-hmm. could go on, you know, for decades or it can so be,
basically,
you know,
you think we need to maximize this time.
Maximize. Mm-hmm. I wish we start having, you know, like this Nigerian, I mean, I know, like, you know, like the Don Jazzes, they have their own, you know, record labels and stuff. But, you know, we need to see more, like, just,
expand,
you know,
expansion. Yeah.
You know, because the, you know, I feel like, the, you know, like, what is it, like the eyes on there or on us right now
mm-hmm.
in the music. So, you know, we need to see more. And when I say we need to see more, we want to see more outside of Nigeria.
Yeah.
You know, Ghana, good job. Kenya, good job. Tanzania, mm-hmm. like, we need more party after party, you know? you know, shout out to, what's it called? Johnson, the girl, Show My Josie.
Show My Josie, yes.
You know, she sang the John Cena song. Yeah. I want to see more all over.
Yo,
can we hear, you know?
Another region that gets left out but is booming is
South Africa. Bro. They're doing Afro techno.
They are booming.
They're doing literally techno music with an Afro
fusion. Afro house. Yep.
They're doing Afro house music. You know?
You see Black Coffee.
Yeah.
In Ibiza.
Bro.
Signed for entire summers. You know, like,
that's what we need to see. So that's what I'm saying.
Show Majosi.
Yeah.
She's actually half Kenyan, half South
African. Yeah. If y'all don't hear that,
she raps in Swahili, and then I don't know which South African.
It was dope. That John Cena song. I was watching the Kelly Clarkson interview. Dope interview, yeah. By the way. But yeah, it's like,
she's dope. And actually, even within South Africa, they have, like, you know, the AKAs, I mean,
think of even when the Black Panther era came around, right? The whole Gwara Gwara movement, mm-hmm. that whole beat, right? It's mm-hmm. them, South Africa. So mm-hmm. sleeper country in terms of African music.
Sleeper. And they're even, well, not they, but Angolans are even expanding into that.
Angola, you know? Too. That's another, like, country for, you know, like, so they've been always, like I'm saying, we have the talent, like mm-hmm. you said. Believe it or not, we understand that there's 200 million in one country.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of talent outside of, you know, Nigeria that, you know, sleeper country, sleeper, you know, talented artists. So I'm saying it, Afrobeats is on right now. African music, it's, you know, in high demand. It's really been always in high demand if you look at it, like, yeah. quality music.
Because,
you know, like I said, if you guys don't know, if anyone who doesn't know who Yusuf Nur is,
yeah.
this guy was winning Grammys in, like, you know, early 2000s. This guy was playing, like, God knows when, going to Europe, big places,
big.
Like,
he's
the biggest
big
concerts.
Deal.
Because it was that authentic Baba Man. There's a lot of, like, before it was more, you know, like, authentic, pure African music. That's always been largely appreciated because it was authentic.
Yeah.
And now what Afrobeats
always sells.
Yeah,
that's why Burna's blowing.
That's why Burna's blowing.
Yeah.
And that's what the resurgence of Afrobeats is. And you said it. It's like people started, you know, claiming it and mm-hmm. becoming authentic again, stopping trying to rap like we're Jamaican mm-hmm. or, you know, like...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like I say, it became our own thing, and people want to see that.
Yeah.
So, shit.
I mean, we God bless his soul. They have a guy named the late Jeffrey Oryema.
Mm-hmm.
He had, like, a very interesting life because his dad was killed by Idi Amin, and then he had to flee to France. But he had a huge following in France.
He's
a Ugandan guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sold out arenas and stuff. You have people like... Hugh Masekela, you know,
yes,
from South Africa.
From South Africa.
Like, there's always been a lot of
artists, the coffee, all of this.
Boy, they
Papa Nyema, come on.
Papa Wemba, God Papa bless Wemba, soul, all like,
these guys were selling out arenas in Europe.
Easily.
And there was no, like, pure African beats, and so.
And that's pure as it gets, you know?
But, you know, our generation, like I said, our generation, you know, we didn't see that. Mm-hmm. So we were watching, you know, other music.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like I said, and we're talking about here is until like 2005-ish, you know, when we're like, and we start seeing a few pioneers coming out of Nigeria saying, you know what, we're just going to start doing our own thing and promote it.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, it's blown. So, like you said, to answer your question really long, is yeah. Mm-hmm. We need further more representation, I feel like, of authentic African music across a vast number of countries, artists from a vast number of countries,
mm-hmm.
Just diversified, and it's like great. It's happening right now, guys.
Yeah,
it's happening. Like you said, we just talk about South Africa here. Mm-hmm. You know, Ghana's been doing their thing, mm-hmm. you know. Uganda over here, mm-hmm. Kenya, mm-hmm. you know, but we need more. We need Kenyans, more. Angola, you know.
Blowing up all over the world,
we
too,
need more.
Man.
It's like I'm saying, like, if not, if so, trust me.
I mean, you get, you see, like, West Africans listening to Sauti Sol, like...
of course!
The Kenyans are doing their thing, man. The other thing I wanted to mention, though, is shout out to those pioneering Nigerians, though.
Yeah, we gotta give them props.
Because...
the Dibanj and those guys?
Yeah, if it was Mohit? Any African who could come and say, this is me, I'm here, you gotta put Nigerians up there. And, I mean, they did it, you know? So shout out to them for being
you know,
the
like I said, they're the front runners right now, and that's why, rightfully so, they're the front runner. And it all ties down to when the Kiki say, we say the Lion King album, why did Beyonce go and choose mainly Afrobeat artists? You know,
that's what
you know. That's they you know, at the end of the day, whether we like it or not, they're the ones who pioneered. They're really the ones who ignited
mm-hmm.
this global resurgence of, you know, African music.
Mm-hmm.
So. Gotta give credit where it's due, fam.
And I think one area that it's probably peak is the dance communities. You watch all these YouTube videos, like all the major dance studios.
Everyone is Afro. Everyone Afro.
Some sort of African artist.
Yeah.
Like on their pages. So the dance community, I don't know. They've started taking notice a few years ago, but shout out to them for, you know, picking it up.
So. And now, you know, like, let's say, you know, we've kind of brought it up with African music. So if we want to bring African film into this, also, we get on Netflix now. There's a bunch of African music movies in there. Of course, primarily Nigerian.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a lot of, you know, different Afro, you know, Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
HBO.
I watch a lot of French, well... Congolese,
the Francophone movies—they've been there. So
yeah.
We're starting to see, like, especially like let's use Nollywood for example.
Because
remember, MTV, we had our shows, African shows in MTV. They used to show all Sugar, all these shows. Mm. You know, we used to watch it. You know, very good quality shows.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it was not well. Okay, streaming services were not, you know, at that time what they are now, but. Now you go on Netflix, there's a vast, you know, variety of African or Nollywood movies. So when will we get to a point where Nollywood movies, well, I feel like Lionheart
did its thing, bro.
Did its thing.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like quality has always been there. Nollywood movies, as it may seem to some, very gimmicky, but, you know, they were very, like, they've always, like, been some really quality movies. Mm-hmm. If you remember growing up, we really watched, like, this was really good. Production, yeah, they don't have big $200 million production budgets to bring that quality. But the storyline and acting, we've always seen, like, it's been there. Right now, we're at a phase where we're seeing it on streaming services, such as Netflix and stuff. So, one, I guess now this is going to be your question.
Mm-hmm.
How do we, one, again... diversify it, bring more movies from different countries,
mm-hmm.
bring that platform that tell different stories,
mm-hmm.
increase in production value and kind of have that, you know, recognition that, you know, Oscar or Emmy worthy recognition of quality from the continent.
I think first step is we've already began that whole movement by expanding, like, I know there's a lot of, like, movement towards film in Uganda. I have a friend who's actually studying film in China.
Wow.
He came home and he traveled to like the north and then came back to the capital city, and he did a few videos. Man, if I show you his videos, quality, you would think it's next level, you know, like type things like that. His name's Higa, shout out to him. But I think first step is also we stop seeking validation from those who are not in the movement.
Like, I mean, it's not their interest.
What's an Oscar gonna do for us, you know?
Nothing, to be honest.
It's nice to have that recognition, but we need to stop being so hell-bent on achieving that, you know? And more so refocusing our visions to match those of our people, you know? Because you could win an Oscar and it can mean nothing to your people.
True.
You could get passed for the Oscar and make such an influential movie to your people that gets passed down through the generations. You think about it through music, songs like Prime Gawo. There's no African wedding you don't go to and you don't hear
Sweet
that.
Sweet Mother, you know those songs.
Sweet Mother, all that. 70s, like, Brenda, what's it, Vulindela, like. Yeah, all that, bro. All that. They didn't win Grammys.
Nope, but they didn't, think of the impact.
The impact they have.
Yeah.
To this day. It's played everywhere. So I think once we stop seeking validation from those that don't have our best interests at heart, that's where we start to realign.
I agree. I think so. Let's, you know, like I say, because, you know, I remember when we were talking about, like, the whole Sophia in London movie, you know, this came out in, what, 2003, and we're still talking about it?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you say,
and he's a legend.
Everyone called him Osofia. You know, I mean, it's like, yeah, everyone called me Osofia, and it's not even my real name. But it just tells you, exactly. the impact that movie had. Yeah. Forever, I'll know him as Osofia.
Everybody knows him as that.
You know, like I said, yeah, I agree. And, you know, movies, what I love about film is they tell stories best, you know. They're a great way of telling us, like, kind of how the societies are, you know, what the struggles are, you know. They're very good quality movies. I feel like both of us should kind of spend some time, like, research and at least find 5 good quality movies each that, you know, that are, you know, produced, directed, you know, even, it doesn't have to be filmed in Africa, but it's an African movie produced. It can show the story of in a diaspora or from the homeland that we think people should really watch. Because I remember I watched this one movie my sister had recommended. It's called Samba. It shows the immigrant story of the Senegalese immigrant. You know, it's in French, you know, moves here undocumented, you know, he ends up falling in love with this French lady and stuff, but shows the struggle a lot for it, you know, with, you know. So like I say, quality movies that, you know, because movies are so educational too. So anyway, that should be an action item for both of us to look into each 5 really good, like, not even really good, 5 African movies that we recommend for our fellow friends and listeners to,
I think,
to look into.
There's another Senegalese, this French movie, but it's about the Senegalese dude. Kevin Hart remade it. I forget the name of it, but it's about a guy who was a caretaker of this French guy, a rich French aristocrat in a wheelchair. And, I forget the name of it. I'll try and
their quality storylines out there. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. And this is coming from, you know, not only Nollywood, from all over. South Africa, you know, South Africa, Kenya's been doing their thing with the film too. You know, I don't know about Uganda with your captain, your special effects.
Wakaliwood?
Wakaliwood.
Nah, but hey, big up to all the African actors.
But
in
it's
the
still crazy because, you know, think of the budget of these people. You know, like, you know, I watched this documentary with Nigerian movie. I think was it a Vice on HBO? They shoot the whole movie in like 1 day or something. You know, think of how fast that production is.
Efficiency.
This is very efficient. You know, here they're casting and filming in the same day, something like that. So, anyway, with little to very low resources, you know?
Yeah.
East Hollywood, you know, like, what? When we going, you know, it's taking like a whole year, you know, 200, like a whole country GDPs on movies.
They bring out the trailer and they're like, next.
Next 2022, you know?
Like, all right, bro.
It's like, damn, y'all spending like a whole millions GDPs, you know, on production. And, you know, you end up being even disappointed sometimes, you know? So it's like, you know, so anyway.
But also, shout out to all the Africans in the limelight in Hollywood doing their thing. Daniel Kaluuya just came out with Queen and Slim.
I'm checking that out. I'm seeing it on Wednesday.
Yeah. I think I might go see it tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I've heard that movie is crazy. I heard it's super good.
So, and that's also another props. We've seen, you know, like the Daniel Kaluuya's, mm-hmm. Lupita's. Yeah. What's the other guy? Chiwetel? I forgot it. I can't pronounce his last name.
I can't either. 12
Years a Slave, dude. Name, man. Chiwetel. You have David. What's his name, too?
Which one?
David. I forgot.
Oloya?
Yeah. You know?
Okay,
I know
you're talking about.
So, we're seeing, fellow, people from, of African heritage or
doing their thing.
Doing their thing and being represented in the major blockbuster movies. And, like I said, why I like seeing that thing, because it inspires a whole generation. So, mm-hmm. It's always good to see.
Yeah. I'm also happy that we're breaking that stigma or generalization of Africans, It's like, we're not a monolith.
Of course not.
We're so much more than that, and I'm happy that everyone is bringing something new to the game. One place I want to visit right now, is because of the vibrancy of it, is Ghana. I just want to go there and experience their art revolution right now.
Yep,
and cultural,
Ghana's doing a great job, man. Relevancy. I ain't gonna lie. They're having what they're having this Christmas?
Is it Afro Nation?
Afro Nation or something?
Something like that. I don't know.
Afrochella? Is it something like Afrochella?
Something like that, but everybody's going to Ghana.
They're going there. Supposedly. They have the 400 year return. Because the 400 year anniversary of,
I see they just
granted. They have established. A movement for African Americans to go back and find our heritage.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool, but it's like shit.
And Caribbeans,
mm-hmm. There's only a percentage of slaves who originated from Ghana. This should mm-hmm. be a standard across almost every West African country, Look at us, Gambia. We have the most famous slave that has been known up to date.
From Roots, what's his name?
Kunta Kinte,
yeah.
We have, like I said, we should be part of that movement where, I know it's not a lot, but the Gambia Senegalese region, we had the river. There was a lot. God knows how many people that were, captured and went through that, horrible journey, So it should be what Ghana's doing. It should be represented across the board. I feel like in West Africa allowing people to see, African Americans, Afro Caribbeans, Afro Brazilians or whatever, South Americans.
You might run into some pushback with that one, though.
Huh?
So you might run into some pushback with that one.
Well, let's see how it goes for them this Christmas break. then we'll know. But I'm just saying, Conan was there. They were talking about it. From idea standpoint and what I see, it sounds like an amazing idea.
Mm.
But we'll see. Execution is always different.
It's always a different story, yeah. But yeah, I think to wrap up the relevance of Africans in entertainment right now.
And also, let's give the shout out. Well, not even a shout out for Jesse. So what was episode, Matt's episode?
I think that was boy episode good. 5.
That boy good.
5, yeah.
Episode 5, Matt, we had, my Jesse, old, ETA. College friend, Jess, ETA.
Yeah.
Guys, just put, pause this right now and just go to Mr. Easy's page
mm-hmm.
and comment number 2. Jess is there. He's mm-hmm. being nominated for Mr. Easy's challenge. Mm-hmm. So, guys, let's support Jesse. Just please go there and vote for him. He's the second option on the Mr. Easy's page. So, shout out to Jesse. We'll keep supporting you. Keep it going.
Yeah, shout out to Jesse, man. Keep doing your thing. Who else? I want to big up all the local DJs. Like Nayrum. My man's has been pushing the culture for a minute.
I like it.
And basically, all the local DJs in Seattle, because Seattle's such a, complex market.
Very.
Because it's very West African heavy, so...
Is it West African heavy?
I think so. Well, I think it's segregated anyways.
Yeah, yeah. It's spread out.
You know?
But, you know, like, people like Nairam, they're bringing it all together.
All together, bro. Yep, yep. All his so mixes. Shout out to him. He got South Africa, exactly. East Africa, West Africa.
We like to see, you know, a diversification of African music. Yeah. Not like some of the things we've been seeing lately. Yeah, I'll end it there. But they know where I'm leading to. Yeah. So, you know, shout out. Yeah, we appreciate it.
Yeah. But big up to people like them. And Nairam, big up to you for always supporting and pushing the culture, you know?
So, yeah, for sure. Shout out to Nairam. So, we have one more episode, guys. Mm-hmm. This is going to be from after this episode, the boys are going to the motherland. So, that's going to be the episode about the returns.
The return.
Yep. Yep. So, we'll be going each to our respective countries. Mm-hmm. I'll be going to the Gambia, West Africa, GMT.
I'll be in Uganda. Might have just ruined my surprise for a few people. But
oh, shoot.
But anyway, hey, it's all good.
By the way, guys. By the way, guys. I don't have any baggage space for anyone who's asking. I don't have any baggage space.
That was coming, bro.
Please, I don't have any baggage space. I reiterate, I do not have any baggage space. So yeah, we should have actually not said this. Actually, guys, my mistake.
Who has live sports?
Who has live sports? Who have live sports?
But nah, I'll be there. I might, you know, try and slip in a trip somewhere
else. So where are you gonna be visiting?
I'll be in Uganda mainly. I might try to sneak a trip into either Rwanda or Kenya. Mm-hmm. Not sure yet, but
okay,
we'll see. We'll see.
No, yeah. So, same thing here. You know, of course, I want to go to Senegal. Mm. You know, me and my big sis, we're trying to plan it out, you know, for maximum enjoyment. but, yeah, so for our finale, yeah, we're just going to talk about, you know, the experience for us when it's this time of the year, Christmas period, when we have to go back, you know, what we deal with, and when we get there, how our reaction is, what we plan on doing, what the reality is on the ground, how we reflect. And as we just prepare for it, you know, because it's been, what, I don't know, 2-3 years for me. I've not been back.
But the same for me.
Same for you, too. Yeah. So we want to see what the changes are. You're always, you know, curious to see what the changes are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's to be optimistic about and kind of, you know, bring it all together again all the way to episode 1 about our heritage. You know, one thing I'm going to try and do this time is talk to couple more uncles.
I'm gonna
know more of my history.
I'm gonna try and record that. I'm gonna try and record like some of the conversations we have.
That would be good.
Like kind of interview style, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Without them not knowing, because you know, once you tell them you're being interviewed, then you know.
Then
they'll start sprinkling a lot of you know flavor here and there.
a lot of salt bay on.
Yeah, they'll start, you know, but just that genuine conversation. So yeah, that's one thing I'm gonna plan on doing. So I guess in the next episode I'll lay down, you know, I'll try and before that think of, you know, these are the people I wanna talk to and just gonna have that conversation and find out something about it. Cause you know, like when my mom came here to visit me, like she told me, like, so I know I knew I was named after, like, for example, my grand uncle, his name was Alhaji Ibrahima. So that's why my middle name is Alhaji.
Mm.
But my mom told me, you know why he's, you know, the Alhaji is there because the person they named him after walked from Gambia all the way to Mecca for the Hajj pilgrimage. It took him a year to become Alhaji. I didn't know that. So I was telling my mom, like, what?
It was a round trip, a year?
He walked. Well, it took him a year to get there, yeah, and probably another year. So two years. I mean, think of it. So, you know, you just quickly found about 2 years, you know, this is probably like 2 generations in that, you know, the person whose name came down along the line up till it became my name, why he had that Alhaji name, why the, you know, is he had walked from, you know, Gambia, West Africa, across the Sahara Desert, into the Middle East, into Mecca for the pilgrimage, and did that back, walked. And, you know, like I said, back then, you know, airplanes. Can't realistically go sail there or so you know.
Yeah,
so
walk they across were on the camels. Sahara.
They were on
much,
camels.
Right?
You did the Sahara all the way dating back to the Mansa Musa. That's what they did. So you know, and I was just dumbfounded. I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. My mom's like, yeah, that's why. So you know, I'm like, shit. You know? So little things like that. That's what I'm saying. That I want to find about more things like that. So we go see.
For me, it's really just about like connecting with as many people as I can. Well, not as many, but strengthening the relationships that I have right now.
Yeah, of course. And then
just digging a little deeper, because there's a lot of family history that I still don't know about, and I need to find out about, you know. So,
you know, like I say, we can't just talk it, you know. We've talked about it, so let's, you know, like I say, next episode, let's at least share, or, you know, hold ourselves accountable for what our, you know, plan is on that aspect. Of course, we're there to relax, to enjoy, and, you know,
Party after party.
Yeah, of course, that is there too, you know, enjoyment. But, you know, with the serious guys part of it thing too, you know, just we want to come back and, you know, dive into more. Because if we learn more and, you know, what we learn and, you know, as a whole, you know, it can open up or lead to a different conversations and how we can build this off. And how we can kind of, because right now, you know, we're setting the stone, so we have so much left to cover in terms of our conversations on understanding our heritage, you know, our parents' heritage. You know, we've just kind of just started setting the foundations.
Yep.
So this is another step or opportunity for us to build that off.
I think it's also vital that we carry that tradition forward, or our traditions forward. I was at a chieftaincy celebration on Saturday, and to see how much culture there was in, like, this was an Igbo celebration. I was like, yo, I don't want to lose that identity with my people, you know?
Because, you know, like, they're here in America, but they've kept it. You wouldn't have known, probably.
Exactly, yeah. But it's so strong, man. It's so strong. And I feel like anyone going home, actually, man, try and connect with your roots and peoples.
No, yeah. I mean, like I said, we have to capture it. So, you know, like I said, I'll be recording. Usually I'm just there chilling, but, you know, I'll try and take more pictures, more recordings, more videos. You know, and stuff we can share when we come back.
Might do one of those Instagram videos.
Yeah, something, you know, like that.
You understand?
Yes, yes.
But yeah, man, what we saying to the people?
Shit, like I said, we boys are just ready to run away from this Seattle cold out here, fam.
It's a break, bro. You park your car in the garage, so you don't know.
Okay.
Hey.
True.
When I get out the house and it's ice and I'm late, life is hard.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But, you know, and when we come back, you know, it's going to be the whole New Year resolutions.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about it on, you know, like, don't be in the same spot. Mm-hmm. See where that's, you know, a person didn't grow. If you say they've been the same, you know, yo, he's the same person. That's not a compliment.
That's not.
So yeah, we're always trying to find ways to grow.
Yeah.
In it,
bruv.
Yeah, man.
But yeah. Anyway, we're it's late.
Yeah, fam.
Work in the morning.
Seahawks won.
Shout out Seahawks.
In Russ.
We trust.
Yes, sir.
Big up to all the man them on the Seahawks.
Yes. 10-2 out here.
So all you other teams, you can go home already.
Because, you know, the team that we shall not name, we're not doing well right now.
We're going for Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, so, guys. Our full attention, due to the tragic events in Manchester, we're focusing our efforts on American football.
Weird jokers, man. We lost to a team from Kazakhstan.
This guy.
I'll keep it at
farmers, that. Bare farmers, fam. Fishermen out here. Hey, this is painful. I can't. This is...
Life is hard as a Man U fan.
This is just the worst period ever, this guy. I'm waking up at like 8:13 a.m. in the morning, just sitting there in just pain and misery. Anyway. Guys, let's not... It's fine.
Right, shout out to all our peoples. That has been episode 9, brought to you by...
The serious guys.
And the fun guys.
Yes.
Peace.
All right, deuces.